This is Going Public on KRCU, and I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. You might know Eric Cunningham as the city attorney for Cape Girardeau, but not too long ago, he spent his spare time trekking the globe as an eclipse chaser. It's a journey that started nearly 40 years ago in 1979 as a student at the University of Missouri. He didn't get a chance to see the eclipse, but it didn't stop him from spending countless hours and years tracking others down. Cunningham says although his days of chasing eclipses are somewhat behind him, come Monday, he won't have to go too far to see another one.
When I see a total eclipse of the sun, I see an awesome God, an awesome creator that hung all the stars in space and created everything with a mathematical precision that when you look at the orbits of the sun, I mean, not the sun, but of the moon and the earth, it is so mathematically precise that they can mark the places of the shadows on the ground hundreds and thousands of years in the future and in the past because it is so mathematically perfect. And I also see an infinite God, but I also see a loving God too, because there are no other places they know of in the universe where the apparent size of a planet's sun and the apparent size of its moon are the same. In other words, there's no other place they know of in the universe where you can see a total eclipse of that planet's sun from the surface of that planet. And it, to me, is a neat thing to think that God loved the people here enough that just to give them a little treat, something as spectacular as a total eclipse of the sun.
When you see it, what are you looking at? What is that feeling like for you?
Especially the first one. And Marissa, especially if you have planned for years, you have wanted something for, as I've described here, 15 years I had been wanting to see a total eclipse of the sun. 15 years I had planned where the next place would be. With expenses for travel and being a college student, and then fresh out of college and beginning a new job, you having to save money to make those kinds of trips. There was a lot of expense, there was a lot of effort to it, and a lot of study because it was going to be that expensive. You wanted to go where the chances of seeing it were the best. And so you studied weather patterns and all of these things. And so because of all of that preparation, when we were the morning of November 3rd, 1994, and the sandstorm had subsided and the clouds had dissipated and the sun was coming up at around 20 after 8 when the last little bit of the light of the sun went behind the moon, the feeling of exhilaration was difficult to describe. Everybody was cheering. People were shouting. There were thousands of people out in the middle of nothing on the Altiplano in Bolivia, and it was just a spectacular occurrence to see as the first diamond ring took effect, and then totality was there with the corona being so visible, and then for it was about three and a half minutes I think of totality before the diamond ring came out on the other side. But an awesome feeling, especially with all the preparation that had gone on before it.
And so basically that was your home run, because you had you had struck out a couple times before that. And
right.
This was the time. There was like this, at this point, there was this thirst, there was this yearning to finally get to this point.
Right. There certainly was. And let me tell you, sitting in the bus up on the Altiplano the night before with a sandstorm going on all around you, and it was completely overcast outside, our hopes were pretty low. But one of the military generals that was there said, "Oh, you guys, don't worry. This happens all the time. The next morning is always clear." But we were not at all confident, and we were all extremely relieved to get up the next morning and see that the skies had cleared and that we were going to be able to see the eclipse after all.
Whenever I talk to anyone about this eclipse stuff and I mention the weather,
changes the entire thing. I'll give you a couple of stories in my own experience. I told you the one there in Bolivia that morning when we were in Aruba in February of 1998. We had gone to the far eastern end of the island as far as you could go, and the first half of the partial phases that morning, Marissa, were covered by a cloud. And it was one cloud. It wasn't an entire sky that was overcast. It was one cloud that just sat there in front of the sun. And you wished you had a big fan that could have blown the thing away, but you couldn't. And fortunately for us, about halfway through the partial phases, that cloud moved on. But had you stayed in Oranjestad, the big city there in Aruba, about half of totality was obscured, and so the place you are makes all the difference. One little cloud could block it. I have seen and known of situations where an entire cloud day was overcast, but there were slight openings in the clouds, and people were able to see totality right in those few moments. So it's extremely unpredictable, and the suspense is just about not for the faint at heart.
Well, it becomes a race of time. I've talked to some people where they say, you know, if we even see that that the weather is going to be a little cloudy, they will jump in their car and like burrow down the highway to go find another place that they'll get a better opportunity to see it. Have you had those experiences where you just jump right in and you're like, we're changing spots?
Well, one thing about the United States compared to other places like on the Altiplano in Bolivia, there is a wonderful highway system in the United States. And frankly, there have been 23 years that have gone by since that particular one. It is easier to transport yourself to another location in the United States than it is in a lot of other places around the world. And also, in these days, it's easy to just look on your phone and see where the clouds are, see what the cloud patterns are. In this situation, my guess is probably the best chance of being able to see the eclipse is probably going to be somewhere in Nebraska. Around here, I've checked, and 6 of the last 11 years were clear. That's about 60%, which is about 40% chance of it being cloudy. And so if you really want to see the eclipse this time and you're going to be on the ground, it pays to be mobile as much as you can be. But even then, you won't know until no more than a day or two beforehand where the best chances for clear skies will be.
So knowing all that, how do you prepare transportation-wise? You know, if you flew in, how many cars do you have to rent or change over or different flights you have to take to get to the next point to make sure that you're actually seeing this? Because this is not a cheap thing to do at all.
For this particular eclipse, I've got my own map. I've got a book back here behind me that with an atlas of the United States that shows exactly where the places to be are and how to get there. But in other places, a lot of times you don't have the ability to even rent a car. You are very much at the mercy of what the weather will be, and that's part of the reason that preparation is so important. Study the weather patterns. Study where it's likely to be cloudy. I'll give you a great example. In 1994, in the northern part of Chile, in the Atacama Desert, it had not rained in over 400 years in that location. However, because of where the South Pacific lay next to the country and where the sun would shine on the sand and the hot air would rise and where air would blow in from the ocean, it was almost always cloudy. So you really have to do your homework as to where it's where the best chances of clear skies are. Some places that you go, the best chances you have are your own preparation beforehand, because you don't really have the opportunity to be mobile.
You are a family man. You have a wife and you have children. Have they ever gotten to experience an eclipse with you?
Yes. I went to the eclipse in Bolivia by myself with a group, but I was able to take on that one my wife and kids with me to Aruba. And that was really special. Our girls were small, and it was funny, Marissa. They almost seemed more interested in the shells on the ground than they did in the eclipse. I kept having to say, "Rachie, honey, look up, look up, look up." but they did see it. They did enjoy it. And I asked Rachel afterwards, "Well, honey, what did it look like?" And she thought for a second. She said, "A flower," and she kind of stomped off. But that was really a good description for a little child. It looks very much like a flower. The corona, that aural plasma around the sun, when it during the period of totality around the disk of the moon, it looks very much like a little flower. And I thought, what a sweet description by a little girl.
You've taken some really cool images of these eclipses. Can you talk about what we're looking at when it comes to an eclipse, like those phases that go into it?
When an eclipse happens, it's important to realize just what it is that you're seeing. Here, the moon is in between the sun and the earth, and the moon is moving between the sun and the earth. And what we see is that little shadow, that round ball shadow, which is very tiny on the surface of the earth, going from west to east. And as it goes across a particular area, if you happen to be in the path of totality, then you will see a bright ball of the sun. And when the moon shadow first touches it, you will see just a little nick that forms there. That's called first contact. And then that will continue across the disk of the sun until it covers the entire disk of the sun. That is called second contact. And at that moment, you will be able to see the corona, that aural plasma around the sun, which is not normally visible. Immediately prior to that, a couple of neat things happen. Just before totality, when you can see the corona of the sun, there will be the last little bit of light of the moon just before it is covered by the moon. The last little bit of light of the sun just before it's covered by the moon, and you will see the beginning of the corona and the last little bit of light of the sun. And if you take a picture just right, and you see that I have one right here, it looks like a diamond ring, and that is what they call the diamond ring effect. That only lasts for a couple of seconds just before totality, and so you get one chance to get that just before totality, and if you missed it, you get another chance as the moon comes away from the disk of the sun on the other side, and the sun starts to appear again. But during totality, the corona is visible, and the picture that I have there on the left shows that. The big bright corona that you can see during the total phase. During the partial phases, you will need to look through either a welder's lens, or some of the eclipse viewing glasses that you can get, or some kind of indirect way of looking at it, like the pinhole projection that people will use. But during totality, you do not use a solar filter; otherwise, you won't see anything. But it is entirely safe to look at the sun during totality. It won't hurt your eyes at all. But the sun is so bright prior to totality that you can't look at it without some kind of protection or indirect viewing all the way up until the moment of the diamond ring. The two pictures that I have there that show the totality, and then the one to the right of it shows the diamond ring. You'll also notice on the top right portion of the moon's disk there, you'll see some bright red. It looks like little squiggly lines. Those are prominences. In other words, they're big shooting flames coming off of the surface of the sun, and you can see them in the picture as the moon is starting to cover, or has covered, the other otherwise bright areas on the surface of the sun. So that's one of the neat things that you can see during totality. Another picture that I have over here is one that you won't be able to get here in Cape Girardeau, but this one I took on the Altiplano in Bolivia. Because it was about 20 after 8 in the morning, the sun was not as high in the sky. It was probably 20 degrees or thereabouts. And I took that picture, and you can see the totally eclipsed sun. If you look closely, you can see the planet Jupiter to the at about 1:30 to the right of it. And down below, you can see the horizon. The horizon looks like a sunset. And that sunset is all the way around. 360 degrees around you is what you will see. And in this picture, you see the ground, you see that twilight look, and then you see the dark sky. When you're there during the eclipse, you can see stars during that during totality, and it'll be stars that you can't normally see because you're seeing stars during the day, and so the Earth will have rotated during that time. But those are three pictures I have that are here in my office right now.
The people are already reacting. This is like surreal. But when you're talking about nature itself, how is nature reacting to this pretty significant change?
Well, obviously, during totality, it's going to be getting darker. It's not completely black because, as I said, there's twilight all the way around, but it gets darker. And because it gets darker, the effect of the sun is less, and so it's cooler. Sometimes it's even a little bit breezy during totality. And because of that, it gives the appearance of nightfall approaching. And so chickens will go to roost. Sometimes roosters will crow if you happen to be close to farms. Sometimes animals will get nervous about the whole situation, but they will act as if it is either early in the morning or late at night, and do the kinds of things that you would expect to happen at those times.
And then after it's over, they go back to the way it was.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny, but it'll be that way with people too. One of the really striking kinds of things about watching a total eclipse of the sun, even if you're with hundreds of people in an area watching, as the moon is gradually covering the sun, and that disk is more and more covered, and what you see is less and less and less. The excitement will be building up. You'll be hearing people cheering. You can almost hear it, the nervousness arising in their voices, and totality will come, and you will hear people cheering during that time, and clapping, and all other kinds of excitement as they have been watching with anticipation all of these phases occur, and the diamond ring will then come out on the on third contact as it comes out on the other side. But normally, 15 minutes, half an hour later, even though those same things are happening again in reverse, you'll hear people's cars starting up because there's no anticipation anymore. Now it's just going back to the way it was, and it's time to go home.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Marissa, anytime.
That's our show. To hear my conversation with Eric Cunningham, visit krcu.org or go to iTunes to hear this podcast. I'm Marissa Ann Lewis Thompson. Join me Friday nights at 6 and Sundays at 3 for KRCU's Going Public.